Hello, friends, and welcome to the Reclamation Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Colleen Johnson, and I'm here to guide us in raw conversations about thriving in life and work, so that together we can step into personal agency and stop letting life happen to us. We'll cover topics like health, boundaries, communication, finances, and worthiness. That badass business you've been dreaming of, it's not so far off. The desire to wake up feeling fully alive, it's right around the corner. All right. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I am recording today from Washington, D.C. This is the first podcast episode I've recorded while we're here, probably the only one. And so I'm sitting here in our little apartment. I've got some sparkling water in front of me. I've got some normal water in front of me, and I have some lemongrass diffusing in the diffuser. So it's kind of setting the stage where I'm coming from. You'll likely hear some noises from the city because that's where I'm at. And I'm really excited for my conversation today. And I have with me Holly Toronto. And so I'm just going to give a little brief summary of what Holly does and who she is and what she's all about, and then let you kind of introduce yourself, Holly. So Holly is a certified master level coach through Health Coach Institute and has 4 years of experience helping highly driven women stop dieting and build resilience to toxic beauty messages. She uses an intuitive and spiritual approach that guides her clients towards self-trust, confidence, and sovereignty over their entire being, body, mind, and soul. From this place, her clients are able to make self-guided decisions and finally live the life that they desire in the body they live in today. So Holly, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited. We're going to have such a great conversation today. I like just feel it in my energy.
Same here, Megan. Same here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I would love if you could just share a little bit about where you're recording from.
Sure. So I am recording from Sunnyside, Queens in New York City. It's a quaint little neighborhood that's sort of like a hidden gem. People come here and they're like, this is New York City. Like, people are smiling and they're friendly and there's tree-lined blocks. And at the same time, it's New York City. So it's likely that you will probably hear sirens go by or perhaps my dog barking, which I'll apologize in advance for that. But I'm sitting in my office right now that I currently share with my husband because pandemic, couples working from home. And So I have far too many computer screens in front of me right now, but I think I've created a calming space with my water and my notebook, and can sort of hear the sounds of the rain outside as well. It's been a little bit of a rainy day, which I personally love, kind of calms me and nourishes me in a different way than the sun might. So yeah, that's sort of my scene right now.
I love that. And I feel the same way about rain. We've had a little bit of rain here the past couple days, and I love it so much. I took a walk yesterday and was like, I honestly just feel like I needed that, just like to walk in the rain for a little bit. It's just gorgeous. And it's fall, which is just makes it even better. It's like rain with like the fall colors. Yes. Oh, so good. Love it. So today we are going to be talking about reclaiming beauty and dismantling diet culture. Such a great conversation, like such a good topic, so good. And I'm just really excited to hear kind of some of your story, what led you to do what you do. And so kind of with that, I'd love to open it up where you can just share a little bit about what is your story with reclaiming beauty and dismantling diet culture.
Yeah, thank you for this question. And, you know, I do have a sort of a heroine's journey to share. And I think as many can probably relate to, especially those who've been socialized as women or identify as female, you know, our relationships to our bodies become fraught at quite a young age. You know, children as young as 4 and 5 are starting to understand the concept of their body equating and their external appearance equating to their worth and where they sort of stand on these like social hierarchies. And, you know, so many of us have an understanding of that before the age of 4 and 5 at these like super, super tender ages. And so That was absolutely true for me. And then on top of that too, we all have like very intersecting influences on our relationships to our bodies. So things like socioeconomic status or race or family of origin or whatever it might be, religion can also impact our relationship to our bodies. And so my experience in my body and sort of what kind of was the catalyst for me going on this own journey of reclaiming beauty and dismantling diet culture was I grew up in evangelical Christianity in the 90s and early 2000s during the height of the purity movement. Mm-hmm. And so for anybody who doesn't know what the purity movement is, it's this massive movement that encouraged young people to wait until they were married to have sex. And there was lots of messages around, you know, not being able to trust the body and the flesh is sinful and the heart lies. And, you know, this narrative around denying your desires for pleasure and connection and like that being very sinful, being something like your body, your physical body could disconnect you from God, from the divine, and send you to the fiery pits of hell, essentially. Mm. And so that message, that narrative really impacted my relationship to my body in that, you know, going into my teen years, I had a very disordered relationship with food that now I can only look back on and see like, wow, like I would not eat for an entire day and have these binge episodes that no one was really looking in on. It was just something that was happening privately while also having a lot of shame about, you know, as my sexual desire started to wake up in a very natural way, the shame around my body, like what's wrong with me? Why do I want this thing so bad that like I'm told is so wrong and so sinful? And so there was like this deep, like, disconnect in my body between pleasure both from a food perspective and then pleasure from a sex perspective. And I just felt like I was constantly holding this tension in my body, and it made it feel like she was a very unsafe place to be, right?
Yeah.
And so then that kind of followed me into early adulthood. I moved to New York City when I was 18 years old to pursue a career in fashion, interestingly, and very image-centric industry. And, you know, I also at that point developed female adult acne. So I started to feel like I was wearing my body image issues right on my face, which was incredibly challenging, especially, you know, when I'm already sort of prone to like comparison and wanting to look a certain way and wanting to be perceived a certain way. And so I had about a 7-year career in the fashion industry. And, you know, during that time, again, many of the influences in my life, the female influences in my life, the bond between us was, how can we make our bodies smaller, right? How can we make ourselves fit more ideally into the societal norm? And I was constantly surrounded by diets and disordered eating. And then right around the time I got married, when I was like about 27 years old, I decided that I wanted to take a more holistic approach to my health. And I use air quotes when I'm saying that because, you know, that can be a really beautiful thing for many people. But for me, there was sort of this adverse thing that happened in that I went on this extreme elimination diet overnight, and I cut out like all of the quote unquote anti-inflammatory foods. And it was supposed to be this very temporary 6-week experience where I was supposed to like cut these foods out and then add them back in and see how they were impacting things like my skin and my digestion and all of those types of things. Yet that 6 weeks came and went, and there was no plan back for integration. So the doctor that I was working with never really said anything. I never said anything. And the reason that I didn't say anything about like question, like, okay, well, what's integration going to look like? How can I go back to normal eating? It was because I had started to lose weight, right? And so I felt like this thing that I had been working so hard for my entire life to make my body smaller, to make my body more, you know, conventionally attractive, I finally got that. And so it filled this sense of like worth inside of me. Well, also, you know, the wellness industry currently has a big focus on purity, right? Mm-hmm. And so at this point I had, you know, like let go of a lot of like the purity culture stuff. I was married, like I had gone through, you know, my early 20s, like the gig was up, right? But it was interesting that that narrative was still very much so alive in me, where like I needed my diet and my body to be incredibly pure and like nothing toxic or quote unquote bad could cross my lips, because, oh, God forbid, you know, I might actually like put on weight or I might break out or whatever it might be. But interestingly, like this diet actually didn't do anything for me other than make me lose weight. Like my skin did not get better. My digestion didn't clear up. And in fact, there were some really adverse health effects that were happening for me in that my hair started falling out. I was incredibly stressed and anxious around food all the time. So I was the type of person that like, I couldn't go to a social event unless I knew I could control the food, or I would eat before. So I was like socially isolating. And it also felt like, you know, everything that I had created was like dangling by a thread, right? It's like, oh, yeah. Like this sense of self-worth that I had created for myself was dangling by a thread. And interestingly, I became a health coach because of that experience. So I got a lot of requests from people to help them lose weight and be like really disciplined and good with food in the same way that I had been. Little did they know how orthorexic and disordered I truly was. I was hiding that incredibly well. And so I became a health coach because of that. I built my initial health coaching practice off of that paradigm until it got to a point where it became very unsustainable for me. And the turning point happened when I was on a trip with my husband. And we were in Alaska on a cruise. And anybody who's been on a cruise before knows all you do on a cruise is eat, right? You eat like delicious foods. You go to midnight buffets. And I found myself, honestly, every single day having a panic attack. Like I had the worst stomach aches, not from the food because I was hardly eating, because I was so anxious. And I was crying every single day and like telling my husband I would never go on a trip like this with him ever again. Which is like, oh my God, like looking back on it now, like it was the most beautiful experience ever to be in like this like gorgeous untouched land. And so he had to have a very loving conversation with me and be like, hey, you know, you're not really seeming like you're very happy or healthy. Like what's going on with you? And I told him from a place of total honesty, like I felt like, you know, if I were to let myself really enjoy this trip, that I would put on weight. And with that, I would lose all of the praise, all of the accolades, all of the attention that I started to get from being able to be so good and get my body to do this thing that like is the right thing for women to do, right? Yes. And so as synergy would have it, I had brought one book with me on this trip, and it's a book called Intuitive Eating. And I don't know who told me about it. I just know that I brought it with me. Like I was like one of those divine moments that I just felt called to this book. And I saw myself really clearly in it. What I was creating for myself in terms of my own relationship to food, but what I was potentially creating for others. Like, oh my gosh, if I had, you know, triggered somebody else's disordered eating or even an eating disorder, like, gosh, like that felt like a deep moment of reckoning for myself. And so I came back from that trip and I realized like what I've been doing trying to fill this sense of worthiness through my external appearance, through my beauty, it's fleeting, right? It's incredibly unsustainable because at any moment, add 1 pound and the entire thing crumbles to the ground, right?
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of work on myself. I worked with, you know, therapists, and I did a lot of work around the intuitive eating work. And then within, you know, probably 8 months to a year, I completely pivoted the direction of my practice to really helping women do the same thing, because, you know, so many women feel like it's like weight loss or something in their body that they need to change. But like in my personal opinion, it's no, we need to disrupt this narrative around a woman's beauty and her size equating to her worthiness.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for all of that. That was such a beautiful overview of your story and just kind of what you had to process and move through. Wow. There are like so many things that came up for me during that. One of them is, I know you mentioned orthorexia, and I wanted you to just give a brief overview of what that is in case people are unfamiliar with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not technically on paper a diagnosable eating disorder at this point, but there's a growing amount of research around it because it's something that's actually incredibly common. But essentially it's the unhealthy obsession with healthy eating. So it might not show up in the same way a traditional eating disorder would, where there's this hyper focus on like weight and weight loss that could be part of it, but it's more coming from this place of like this wellness culture, right? This idea of like purity with food and making your body incredibly clean, and sort of like what I had mentioned around the anxiety and the stress around food choices. That's sort of like a classic symptom of orthorexia, as well as like, you know, not being allowed to like skip a workout when even when you're on vacation and things like that, where it's almost at this point where your physical health and your over focus on your physical health is actually doing you more harm than good.
Yeah. It's like not allowing space for your humanity, not allowing space for your whole human experience. It's like such a hyper focus. Yeah,
exactly.
So a few other things that came up for me with this was, well, you were talking about Christianity and purity culture and just the messages that we get fed at such a young age. And I think this occurs for both men and women, but it's interesting because I know that I was actually just evaluating some of these narratives from like very young childhood recently, because I decided to cut a lot of my hair off. I had really long hair and chopped it all off, which was so fun. Yes. But it was interesting because I kind of went back to some narratives that I was told growing up when I got a haircut, unwillingly, I didn't want to get the haircut, but I got my grandma took me to get my haircut, and she cut it really, really short. And I didn't really want that. I wanted to grow my hair out. But then what the ramification of that afterwards was, because it was so short, my family kept saying like, oh, you look like a boy. We need to get your ear, like put earrings in. Oh, like this, and this, and all of these messages around, oh, you no longer look like who you're supposed to be as a girl. And now we have to put you in these specific types of clothes. And now you have to, you know, and I was just like, wow, I was like 4 or 5 years old. And those were the messages that were being put on me, instead of just being like, okay, first of all, there's the narrative of like, okay, I didn't have power to say what I wanted to do with my hair. Yeah, I know I was 4 or 5 years old, but there's that. Mm-hmm. But then there was also this realization of like all these narratives that were happening, and how there's very like subliminal messages. This is who you're supposed to be. This is how you're supposed to show up in the world. This is how you're accepted. And then it starts this like ego pattern of safety and like trying to, you know, create that worthiness that's already innate. And that's kind of what you shared throughout your whole story, which was so beautiful of how you like came back to that. And another thing that really came up for me as you were talking was this recognizing how we sometimes just get so comfortable in our patterns. Mm. And then that idea of reclamation, that idea of reclaiming ourselves becomes so foreign and so different. And even the concept of feeling free is like, oh, like if I suddenly felt free, if I suddenly felt worthy, I would have to give up all of these old patterns that I'm telling myself. And that is just like a huge, and it sounded like you had to like move through that. And I'd love if you could speak to that, if any of that like resonates with you.
So much of it resonated, honestly, like the story around like the cutting of the hair. And then I just like my wonder, my curiosity is like what that taught you around like your own unique self-expression, even though it wasn't a haircut that you wanted. It was almost like this sense of like, oh, we have to fix this, right? We have to correct. There's no way we can allow Megan to not present as feminine, right? And what that meant about you and how that might have impacted, you know, certain choices that you wanted to make for your own self-expression. And so there's that piece of it. And then you know, the idea of like of reclamation, that's again, a word that I resonate with deeply. And it's something that I bring into my practice a lot, because what I know, like a full body truth for me, is that so much of the narrative that we have embodied as truth about ourselves, especially as it relates to our external appearance or, you know, these expectations of who we should be, what we should look like, those are experiences of nurture, right? Not nature.
Yeah.
In fact, we come into this world as little babies, like these little sweet, like bundles of joy, who actually really know already how to get our needs met, right? Yeah. We know how to like cry at the scream at the top of our lungs to be fed, to be clothed if we're cold, or have something taken off if we're hot, put me to bed if I'm tired. Like we know our body's cues, and we will like scream at the top of our lungs, right? And then, you know, going into toddlerhood too, it's like you think about a kid like who's like, you know, tummy's hanging out of their shirt and they don't care, or like, you know, they're, yes, like their butts are showing, they don't care. They're just wiggling and playing. And, you know, that's something like, that's how we are meant to be. And of course there's like social propriety and things like that, like things as we grow up that like, that might not be appropriate, but it just goes to show when you see the difference between a child and who's fully expressed in their bodies versus an adult who, mm-hmm, is trying to live up to the expectations of the world around them, that this is something that's inherited, right? It's not something that is actually like the truth of who we are. And so in my work with my clients, what I'm often talking about with them is like, how can we peel back the layers, right? Like layers of conditioning, layers of expectations, layers of constructs, right? Of who we're supposed to be, what we're meant to look like, right? So that we can come back to that place of sovereignty and honor and care for our bodies from that place, and then step into our own unique self-expression. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I have a few clients who have something around like fashion and like dressing themselves in a way that expresses their uniqueness, and like overalls is something that comes up a lot for them. Like, oh, is that like, is, am I like, if they're, you know, 40 plus, like, oh, can I wear overalls? Like, is that mean I'm trying to like be too young? Am I trying to like put out something? Like, they're questioning it. And It's the most beautiful act of reclamation for them when they actually put on the on the overalls and go out into public unapologetically, being like, this is me. This is how I like to dress, or a haircut, or a hair color, or, you know, really just like acting from that place of deep, deep truth and sovereignty. This is how I want to present myself in the world. And it's a lot easier said than done, for sure. But I think it's also, it's like the most freeing, liberating experience when we're able to give ourselves permission to really act from that place.
Yeah. It's just that reminder that like we are our own, and we're told so, like every, like all of the messages are saying somehow that we're not enough, that we don't belong to ourselves, that we don't have any power, that we don't have any agency. And it's just that coming back, like, oh, I am my own. I can make my own decisions. And that's safe. That's okay. Well, and I shouldn't say safe necessarily, because sometimes it is risky and sometimes it's not. And that's actually a very valid thing too, as well. But the more we can cultivate that self-trust, and I know that that's one of your core messages, is like we cultivate that self-trust and then that provides us that expansion, that space where we can then be that creative self that we are inside. I love it. So good.
Oh, hey, it's Megan here. We'll get right back into today's conversation, but before we do, I'm here to let you know about my Coach Yourself to Reclamation Toolkit. This toolkit includes a 30-minute audio training and an ebook journal guide that walks you through the 5 phases of reclamation and how to apply them. If you are a creative, a misfit, or a holy outsider who is done feeling fearful and boxed in, this toolkit is a resource to help you reclaim your dreams and choose your own path. If this sounds like you, head to megscolleen.com, that's M-E-G-S-C-O-L-L-E-E-N.com, and purchase your toolkit now. Let's dive back into today's conversation.
Is there anything else kind of around your story that you feel like you want to share? I know we talked briefly about kind of Christianity and deconstructing from that. Is there anything around that that you feel like would be important or that comes up for you that feels resonant right now?
I'd actually love to talk a little bit more about the intuitive eating piece of it, because I think that also might, it'll intersect well with like Christianity and deconstruction from that. But then also, you know, to give people a little bit more clarity on like, when I talk about helping people move away from dieting, you know, it's something that can feel really scary for people, because in the same way that Christianity or religion gives us this sense of like, oh, I have rules, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have this like roadmap for life. And then if I follow these things, then I'll be good, right? Yeah. Dieting does the exact same thing. Yeah. As far as like, oh, I know that if I'm paleo, I have to follow this and like, I'll be good. Or if I'm keto, I follow this plan and I'll be good. But here's the thing, like when it comes to things like dieting, right? Our bodies have actually evolved to experience something like dieting as a deep threat to our survival. And we experience that as like, oh my gosh, like this is a threat, right? And so what happens, right, on a biological level, when we put our bodies into a state of restriction, whether that's, you know, cutting calories or cutting out certain macronutrients, what will happen is our bodies will be able to sustain that for a period of time. But inevitably, these really powerful survival mechanisms will turn on. And what that will look like is metabolism will slow down and energy levels will decrease. Energy levels will decrease. And things like our sex hormones might start to slow down, because the body is saying like, hey, you don't really have energy for sex right now. And if you are someone who could make a baby, like don't do that, because you don't have the energy to do that right now. We don't have the resources to carry a child, right? Healthfully. And so those are some like serious things that are happening for our bodies, serious survival mechanisms that are being activated. But, you know, I even have people say, well, I gave up dieting a long time ago. I just like watch what I eat or whatever whatever it might be. But here's the thing, our bodies and our minds experience restriction also really powerfully on a psychological level. So the mere thought of, I can't have that, I can't have that cookie, I can't have that ice cream, I can't have that bread, can actually create erratic thoughts and behaviors around those foods. So in the same way, like if you grew up in purity culture, there's this sense of like, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex. Oh my God, how much more tantalizing it made sex, right? In the same way with food, it's like, don't have that bread, don't have that bread. It's like, oh my God, that bread becomes that much more tantalizing. And so when we restrict even on a psychological level, it'll create these erratic thoughts, behaviors around food where we're actually not acting from a place of autonomy, right? That's what it's like binging or eating past the point of fullness where you get really uncomfortable. Like that's where that stems from, is that place of like, it's like the pendulum swings in the opposite direction. You're really not acting from that place of autonomy in your body. And so this is why I'm like so passionate about helping people stop dieting, because it clearly doesn't work. And you know, a lot of the research shows that people who embark on weight loss journeys, they actually in the long run probably end up in a larger body, because our bodies do this thing called rebound weight gain, right? Or we're able to like lose, you know, 10, 20 pounds or whatever. And then our bodies put back on 25, because essentially what our bodies are saying is like, hey, I don't trust you. I don't like what you did. I don't like that you put me on a diet. I don't like that you cut me off from the things that are really pleasurable and enjoyable. And I actually experienced that as a threat. And so I'm going to put on more so that if you do this again, I'm going to have some reserves.
Wow.
That it's like this massive like character flaw if they're unable to follow through on a diet, just in the same way they're like, I felt like it was a massive character flaw that I couldn't wait until my wedding night to have sex. Right? And in either one of those scenarios, it's like, are we acting from a place of like, this is what's true, right? This is what's right for my body. And so in my work with my clients, the antidote to that, to this, and this might give people, especially those who have a history, a long history of dieting, this might give you massive anxiety, but the antidote to dieting is actually to give yourself unconditional permission to eat. Right. And so this is the foundational principle of intuitive eating. It's to know that I have permission to eat whatever I want, whenever I want it. Right. And from that place, what choice would I like to make for my body? Right. Would I like to have that pizza right now, because that sounds really, really delicious? Or do I want that salmon and roasted veggies? Or do I want that donut? Or do I want that peach? Knowing that whatever choice that I make, there's no good or bad. There's no morality. This is a neutral choice. But what unconditional permission to eat does is that it calms the nervous system, and it takes out that like, oh, I really want that thing, but I'm not allowed to have it. Oh my God, I've got to eat all of it now. To, I can eat that thing if I want to, and I can have the amount that satisfies me and move on with my life. No punitive punishment after, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really what that's the reclamation right there, right? It's taking our power back from, you know, feeling this sense of like anxiety and stress and like, oh my God, am I going to be good or bad based on my food choices? And really coming from that place of like, oh, what would be really the best, most delicious, most delightful decision for my body today?
Yes. I love that. It like really mirrors the phases of reclamation that I walk my clients through, which are, it's playful curiosity and then non-judgment and then self-trust. So the first part, the playful curiosity, is just, well, just asking any of the questions, all of the questions, nothing is off the table. And then sitting with whatever you find without judgment, just being like, there is no right or wrong. It just is. And that's okay. And that's so like, whatever we're reclaiming, like that's so powerful to suddenly take those like right and wrong off of the table and just be like, oh, I get to make an empowered decision based on what I want.
Right.
And that like is such a foundation for developing that self-trust of like, remembering, oh, I can actually listen to what my body's saying. So I don't remember who said this, but I heard a quote at one point, but it's like, your desires are yours for a reason or something like along those lines. And it's like, we're given these messages from our body for a reason.
Yes.
We're given these desires for a reason. And yes, there's so much to the conversation. And I think that just like anything, like we can't put binaries on it because there's a lot of gray area that, you know, you have to figure it out. You have to feel into, you have to understand. But when we can take the binaries off the table, it gives us permission to explore. It gives us permission to go so much deeper within ourselves. Resonate with that so, so much.
Yes. Yes. And it moves away from this like conversation around morality, right? This sense of like, I'm good or bad based on my food choices, or I'm good or bad based on how my body looks, right? It's like, oh no, actually, like I'm of the belief that you are inherently good. Like you are inherently good. Just sitting there listening to this podcast, you are inherently good. You are inherently worthy. You are inherently enough, right? Yes. There's nothing that you need to do. There's nothing that you need to like say. There's no like prayer that you need to pray in order to be good and worthy, right? And nothing outside of you gets to decide that. Like you eating a hamburger and french fries, right? Like that doesn't make you bad, right? You didn't murder anybody. You are not bad for that choice. Neither are you good because you chose a salad, right? Neither one of those. It's just a neutral choice, right? Because you are inherently good no matter what.
And you are inherently sovereign. Like you have power. And that's the piece of that I think is really beautiful, is that remembrance that you decide. You get to decide. You are sovereign over your decisions and your, like, you have the power to do that.
And it makes you resonate. Beyond reaction, right?
Yeah.
Like when you stand in your sovereignty, because like what I notice with my clients is that like when we first start working together, they might have like all of these rules and restrictions around food. Right. Mm-hmm. And those are something that they're like, they're in reaction to diet culture, right? Like that's why they're following those rules. Cause they're like, I need to like follow this prescribed diet so that I get my body to this prescribed way. And then I check the box, I'm good. Right. Mm-hmm. But then when they move through it, sometimes the pendulum swings, which is a natural, healthy part of the process, where suddenly they become like the rebel, right? They're like, I'm just like, it's like almost like, oh, screw it. Right. I'm going to eat all the things. And then they feel like really sick and uncomfortable. Again, normal part of the process. There's no judgment around that, but notice that both are reactions. Right? Like when you're the good girl, you're trying to be good, that's in reaction. And when you're rebelling, you're also in reaction. And so sovereignty is like when you can move beyond the good girl or the rebel and come back to like, what's actually really true for me. And I can trust myself in that.
Oh, yes. I love that. I noticed too, it was interesting when you were explaining the piece about like, what if you could just eat anything that you want? Mm-hmm. That's where immediately my like reaction piece came up. Like I was just feeling it in my body, like, ooh, like, but no, I can't. Like,
yes.
So it's like that, oh, okay. That's where that not judgment, like don't judge it, like hold space for it. And then you can enter that space of, you know, responding, not reacting.
So many people feel, Megan, what you just felt, like that reaction that, oh, like every single one of my clients, anytime I do this work with them, they have the exact same reaction. And it's because they're believing, well, if I gave myself unconditional permission to eat, I would eat all the quote unquote bad things, right? And then those bad things would lead me to gain weight or feel sick or whatever it might be, right? And what I want to just name for anybody else who's feeling that is just to notice like, well, that's still in reaction, right? Like if you're believing that you're only going to eat the quote unquote bad foods, like I can almost guarantee you that you wouldn't stay in that place. You might be there for a while. There's like a honeymoon phase that gets to happen when like you're reclaiming your relationship with food from diet culture. But ultimately your body wants to feel good and she will guide you. Your bodies will guide you towards the right decisions for them. While holding space and nuance for like, hey, you know, the other night I had a margarita. Like I woke up the night, like half a margarita even. And I woke up the next day and I was like, oh, that didn't feel good. Like that does not feel good in my body today. Do I judge it? Do I make myself wrong? No, I respond. I'm like, okay, all right, body, we need some water today. We need some lemon. We need like maybe some like good stretching and a little bit of movement to kind of get myself back to feeling good again. But there's no like bad or wrong. That's what gets to be removed. And you know, the truth is also like, if you think about our bodies like love variety. Our bodies love to eat like a bunch of different kinds of foods. That's the way that we optimize our health, right? Is when we eat like a bunch of different foods, right? Instead of from this like narrow menu. And so if you think about the idea of only eating your quote unquote bad foods, like how boring that might become over time. Like your body will guide you back into balance. Your body will guide you towards what feels most good for your body. While also, just holding space for nuance and allowing for pleasure and enjoyment and satisfaction across the spectrum of food.
Yeah. So, so good. So one thing that I was thinking about though is how do you recognize diet culture? Because I feel like just like all of the very nuanced messages that we get throughout our lives, diet culture can be very tricky to spot. And I'm curious, how do you spot diet culture? What do you recommend for people as they try to reframe diet culture?
Yes, such a good question. Diet culture is incredibly sneaky. Incredibly sneaky. You know, I'm 33 this year, and I spent probably 28 years of my life indoctrinated into diet culture. And so to expect that I wouldn't even have it come up for me from time to time would be like unrealistic, right? It's the air we breathe. It's the water we swim in. And so it's literally everywhere. And so the first piece that like I would always offer to people is like compassion, compassion, compassion. If you are on your journey to reclaiming yourself from diet culture, be patient with yourself and have a lot of compassion. But, you know, the definition of diet culture is that it's a system of beliefs that values weight, size, and physical appearance over actual health and well-being. And so, you know, this is something that you have to have a certain level of self-awareness to ask yourself. But when you are taking action for your body, like let's say you're exercising, right? And you're doing, I'm totally making this up. You're like, I'm going to go for a run tomorrow, right? And you ask yourself the question, if I knew that going for a run tomorrow, or if I started running and I made that like a regular routine for myself, that my body wouldn't change in the slightest, right? I would stay the exact same size. I wouldn't get any muscle tone. My body would stay exactly as she is, right? Would you still want to do it? And if the answer to that question is like, no, I actually kind of hate running. I was really just doing it because I thought it would make me lose weight or tone up, right? That's diet culture. That's diet culture infiltrating your decision. Versus if you were to say, you know what? I don't care what my body ends up looking like. I love the feel of the sweat dripping down my face and my lungs expanding with air when I'm running. And I love being outside and pounding the pavement. And that feels so good in my body. I don't care what happens. That's different, right? Like that's actually you in your own experience of like, this is what's best for my body. This is what feels really good. And so we have to slow down and get present to what's the reason I'm making that decision. Am I choosing that salad because I'm in reaction to having eaten something the previous night that I'm perceiving as bad? Or is that a salad? I'm eating the salad because that sounds like so good. It sounds vibrant. It sounds bright. It sounds like it has all of the textures and flavors that I'm craving. Again, that's sovereignty. And so the distinction that I like to make when I'm going through this with my clients is, are you doing this for your body or to your body, right? For your body is sovereignty. To your body is reaction to diet culture or unrealistic expectations of beauty. And so just get really clear with yourself on what is your motivation behind that choice for your body.
I love that so much. I think that just that simple like word for or to like that is everything. Yes. That's so good. Yes. Something that was coming up for me as well, and this is something a little bit earlier on, was just this recognition that when feeling like sovereignty just feels like a little bit hard, like so much of the thought process that we've been discussing is it's like we believe the worst about ourselves. Like if we trust ourselves to decide, I want to eat, I can eat anything and everything, we believe the worst that we are going to choose the worst. Yes. And it's this like reframe of, well, what if I believed the best? What if I believed in myself? What if I believed in my capacity? Yes. And that reframe too just feels so much more liberating and life-giving of like, oh, for my body or to my body? Am I believing the best or am I believing the worst? How can I reframe this thought so that I am believing the best, so that I am serving my body? All of that just feels so good.
That's the thing. Oh, that's so good.
I love it. So I would love, I know we just kind of, that in itself just felt like a very empowering tip, just that simple, like four or two.
Yeah.
But I'm curious if you have any other like empowering tips that you can share with people listening and for me as well, because I'm taking a lot from this.
Sure, absolutely. So this is, I always love to credit my teachers. If I got this from a teacher, totally. I will credit credit them 100%. And also know that like when a teacher teaches me something and it resonates, like it's also my duty to share it too. So I'm here to share it. Sure you probably know Jamie Lee Finch. She's taught me a bunch. And I like, again, don't know her like totally personally. I'm a part of some of her programs, but I follow her online and I've learned so much from her and what she's taught me. And this has made the biggest difference in my relationship in my body, is that we have been, again, socialized to think of our bodies as objects mm-hmm. to manipulate, objects to change, objects that exist merely for the viewing pleasure of men, right? The male mm-hmm. gaze. And so when we treat our bodies like objects, yeah, of course, it's so much easier to hate an object or want to change an object or punish an object, right? But when we actually shift and look at what our bodies actually are, they're human beings. Mm-hmm. They're human beings with complexity and emotions, and they deserve to be loved and nourished and cherished simply because they are human beings. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that honestly has made the biggest difference for me is shifting from calling my body an it to a she.
Yeah.
So I no longer say it. I no longer call my body a vessel. I no longer call my body a vehicle. I even no longer call my body a temple, which is obviously something like in spiritual communities, it's like, oh yeah, like your body is a temple, right? You want to take care of a temple. And I'm like, why do I want to take care of a temple over a human being? Like, no, actually I want to take care of a human being more, like this living, breathing human being versus the structure. I get what people are trying to do with that narrative, but like, and I guess the Bible is trying to do with that narrative because it's also from that text. But like, when I think about what's going to empower and motivate me to honor and care for my body, it's thinking about her as a person. Mm-hmm. And so that would be the first thing, is like shifting from calling your body an it to using the pronouns that you identify with.
Mm-hmm.
That will make the biggest change in your relationship to your body. So that would be the first thing. The second thing that I would say is, again, like kind of going back to this idea of slowing down and getting clear on what your motivations are for certain actions you're taking for your body. Also getting clear on where your thoughts are coming from, right? Mm-hmm. So slowing down and noticing like, okay, like I'm having this negative thought about my body. And you know, women tend to have a lot of judgment around their midsection, right? This expectation that you have this flat belly for whatever reason, I don't know why, that there's a lot of judgment around that area. And so just getting like slowing down and noticing the thought, like, oh, okay, like I'm looking at my body and I'm telling this story about it. Like I had a client who said that because her belly hung over her pants, when we drilled down deeper, what she was believing is that she was unattractive and therefore unlovable. Right.
Yeah.
And so when we looked deeper at that, we're like, whose voice is that? Right. So asking that question, like, whose voice is that? Is that my voice that's saying that? Or is that the voice of a parent, a grandparent, a partner, right? Somebody else who's maybe said those things about you before that you're taking on as true about yourself. Right. And so you can kind of create that separation between, oh, is this actually even mine?
Yeah.
But then on top of that too, like if it's not anybody else's voice, then it's probably diet culture or beauty culture's narrative, their voice. And so actually learning how to talk to that, right? So in my program Homecoming that I lead with my business partner, Julie Olemacher, we actually encourage our clients to name their diet culture voice, right? So like,
yes,
it's like Larry or I don't know, some like random name. And they're like, anytime it comes up, it's like, whoa, hold up there, Larry. let's slow down for a second. And I know it sounds cheesy, but what it actually does is it creates separation between you and the voice of your inner critic and allows you to recognize like, oh, hey, that's not actually mine, right? I'm carrying that, but that's not actually mine. And then from that place, you can start to choose new, more updated beliefs about yourself. And maybe you can't go from my belly's hanging over my pants, therefore I'm ugly and unlovable to, oh my God, I love the way that I look overnight. Like, that's not the expectation. But maybe you can go to, okay, I'm like my belly is hanging over my pants and therefore I'm unattractive and unlovable too. And I'm okay anyways.
Mm,
right. Yeah. Like looking at my belly and being like, and I'm okay. right? And I choose to love myself anyways, right? So it's slowing down and knowing that you don't have to go from like, I hate my body to I love my body overnight. And just really allowing yourself to be present with like, okay, what's the belief that I want to be carrying about this body?
Yeah.
And then the last piece to that too, that I would add is like, a lot of times when people come to work with me, they want to get to a place where they're able to like look in the mirror and love what they see. Right. Mm. And you know what, that can be great. I would love for people to experience that, be like, damn, I love what I see when I look in the mirror, but that's not the ultimate goal of this work. The ultimate goal of this work is to be able to look in the mirror and know that no matter what's looking back at you, that your body is good no matter what.
Mm. Yeah.
And really having that be the foundational truth for which you show up in your life for your self-care, for your relationships, for your purpose, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I love each and every one of those. That's so good. So, so good. I know with the second one that you were talking about, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Melissa Ambrosini's work, but she has like a TED talk that's all about like naming your inner critic. Mm-hmm. And it's so good because it is just like that recognition of like, I think she uses the word like negative Nancy or something like that. And it's just like, oh, okay. Now I can picture this person. Like, it's like, I can personify this negative voice and actually, I don't know, separate myself from it. Recognize that I am not my thoughts.
Yes.
I can decide which thoughts I decide to engage with and say, okay, that's negative Nancy. Thanks for your little blurb there. And you're not serving me. So I'm going to move on to something more beneficial. I love that. Just such a simple and practical tip.
Yes. Underrated for sure. Because I feel like sometimes people are like, yeah, I heard that one before. But I'm like, have you tried it? Like, have you actually done it?
Yes.
And just say like, listen, Nancy, I'm not available for that anymore.
Yes. So good. I love it. Love it. Love it.
And the last one I'll say too, because I feel like this one is important to mention, but like when those thoughts do come up, to ask yourself the question, who profits from me feeling this way about myself?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Because that can really help you come back. Like that one makes me angry, right? To think that someone would profit off of my insecurity or would actually have a vested interest in me or someone that I love feeling like crap about themselves. And so when I ask that question, who profits? I'm like, oh, hell no, that's not mine.
Yeah.
To that place of sovereignty.
Totally. Oh, I love that so much. And that it does, it like creates that separation again. Of recognizing, oh, this isn't my voice. This is something I've been fed so that someone else can make money off of me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it's like an anger and also like a refreshing, like, oh, wow, that's not mine. And a like holy rage.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, I love that. Well, is there anything else around that you want to chat through or anything that we've been talking about before we move into our wrap up questions for today?
Yeah. I mean, I would say just like, keep coming back to that place of like, of the two versus four, like what am I doing to my body versus for my body? And really, really anchoring into this sense of like, I can trust myself wholeheartedly, right? To make the right decisions for myself and my body.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Thank you so much for sharing that. Awesome. So for our wrap up questions, what is one way you slow down amidst our busy world?
Oh, so I would say that one way I slow down is actually through my dog. He is such a great teacher in terms of just like slowing down. And I notice that if I need to take him for his afternoon walk or whatever it might be, I'm like, all right, let's do this. Let's get you to poop. And then we're going to go back inside. But he wants to stop and smell every single patch of grass and rose. And he notices everything. And that really invites me to just slow down and be present and like look and witness the world around me. So I have to credit Gatsby, my 2-year-old puppy for that.
I love that. Yes. For the first month we were in DC for 3 months, and the first month we didn't have our dog here. Now for like this final, we have like 1 month left. So the past month I've had him here, and that's been very true. Like just, especially in the city, I've noticed that I've had to really reground myself a lot. I'm not used to being in such a metropolitan area. And he just our walks were just, he always just takes his time. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me to just kind of get out of my head, notice what's around me, take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Our pets, what would we do without them?
Oh my gosh, they're the best.
Such good teachers.
Yes, they are. They are.
Awesome. And then who are a couple of your current role models or mindset expanders?
Well, I mentioned one, Jamie Lee Finch has been a really big influence on me and my work. And then I also know that you coached with her, but Madison Morgan is somebody that I follow that really, like, oftentimes will just completely blow my mind with things that she says. Yes. But then on top of that, you know, recently I've gotten into Richard Rohr's work. Having grown up in Christianity and sort of moved away from, deconstructed from that, I've been flailing in this place of like, well, what is my spirituality? What is my connection to that which is greater? And interestingly, his work has brought me back to Christianity, but in a way that totally reflects, well, not totally yet, because I'm still reordering, I'm still reconstructing, but has much more than ever started to reflect my values. A form of Christianity that has way less to do with personal salvation, especially through my purity, and more to do with like what he calls a corporate or a universal or a collective salvation, where we're all working towards that good together. And so that's been incredibly nourishing for me and mind expanding as well.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And then how can we find and support you online?
Yeah, so I'm fairly frequently on Instagram. So, and it's super easy to find me. It's just my name, holly.toronto, and Toronto is spelled exactly like the Canadian city. And then if you go to my Instagram page, you can get access to any other podcasts that I've been on. The link in my bio also has an awesome download with a body gratitude meditation and journaling guide that I love to give out to people, as well as my Facebook group where I do a lot more online challenges and journeys and things like that to support people around these exact topics that we talked about today. But I would say, yeah, head to my Instagram and then you can be directed appropriately through there.
Awesome. I love that. What would we be without our like link in bios these
yes,
days?
Exactly.
It's like a little guide map.
Exactly. Yep. Everything you need to know.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This is just, I love seeing how so many of the things that we're reclaiming, the journeys are like very much mirror one another. But to also have my own mind opened up to an area that I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about diet culture. And those narratives are there. They're like pretty ingrained. And when we spend time to just unpack them a little bit, it just develops that self-trust so much more and the confidence so that we can be ourselves and be our most like fullest, most vibrant self. So thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you're doing in the world and for your time today.
Thank you, Megan, for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Reclamation Podcast. I hope it served you on your own reclamation journey and know that I am rooting for you all the way. If you are desiring support on your journey, head to megscolleen.com. That's megscolleen.com to learn more about me and my current coaching offerings and availability. If you want to learn more about the show guests, head to the show website, thereclamationpodcast.com. And last, but definitely not least, if you found value in the show, sharing this episode with friends and posting a quick review is always appreciated. As always, reclamation is yours.